And, you know, it's easy, you know, to get in your head and walk away from a race like that and be really upset and discouraged. But then having something kind of so pure happen, mm-hmm. like Meb grabbing my hand and seeing people's response to that. And, you know, he didn't have a good day either, right? But it's all relative.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for joining me for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast brought to you by Runners Connect. I know there's hundreds of other ways you could be spending your time, and I really appreciate that you've chosen to tune in today. So last week, I talked to Kristen Marvin, who's a performance recovery specialist. We discussed how our everyday movements are actually what are injuring us, not so much the running we do. So on to today. Do you remember what happened at the finish line of the Boston Marathon last year? That's 2015 for anyone listening later in the year. No, I'm not talking about the winners of the race, but I think most runners, well, runners in America will know what I'm talking about. Do you remember what Meb did as he crossed the finish line? He grabbed a surprised female elite runner, her hand, and he held it as they went across. Today we're going to be talking to that runner. So not only did she become an overnight celebrity, but she also has an inspiring story herself. So if you feel like you do not have the time to get your training in, just take a listen to this. It may just change your perspective. But before we get into the interview, let's have a word from our sponsor. Running with music or podcasts distract us when those mental demons are loud, but not when you're tangled in cords. Jabra Pulse is a wireless sports earbud that is perfect for runners of all levels and speed. Visit jabra.com/runnersconnect to enter to win a free Jabra Pulse every month. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Hillary.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you on here. So I've talked a little about you in the intro, but I want to start with Boston 2015. I kind of have to begin there. So can you share with our listeners from outside the US, or for those who may not know, what happened at the finish line of your Boston Marathon 2015?
Sure. So Boston 2015, this was, so we're 2 years after the marathon bombing, a year after Meb Keflezighi became the first American to win the marathon, and I don't remember how many years. You know, it was a pretty windy and cold and really raw day. It wasn't my best race. You know, I really cramped up and was getting cold as I was in the last few miles of the race. And as I was coming down Boylston Street towards the finish line, very close to the finish line, all of a sudden I hear people cheering for Meb. And then he kind of grabbed my hand right before we crossed the line and raised it up and what's now been called doing a Mebby, and we ended up crossing the finish line together, which, you know, got a lot of attention and excitement, you know, just from the crowd. And then afterward, just, I know you wanted to talk about, but it was a pretty crazy experience, and it happened so quickly that there wasn't really much time to think about it. And it was mm-hmm. just like, I had to raise my hand and smile and kind of go with it at that point. So
Did you know at that moment that it was him, or did you think it could be something else? Like, were you just so out of, you know, shocked, or what were you thinking when someone grabbed your hand?
I knew it was him because I did look over my shoulder a little, okay. And I could, the announcer had said that Meb was approaching the line. So, you know, I could kind of hear and see someone coming up beside me, but I didn't think he would actually grab my hand. But, you know, it wasn't really an option. In my mind, this is what would happen, but it was really only two or three steps before I crossed the line.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot of time to think about it. And obviously at the end of a marathon, you're tired and your brain isn't very sharp.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. And so just thinking about it, like you mentioned a little bit earlier, and I've read in some other interviews that you're kind of having a bad day. And did that kind of show you that things happen for a reason? Like, you know, how did that change your perspective on the sport? Because, you know, you having a bad day and yet you had this wonderful moment happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think it makes you take this time to think and kind of step back and think about, you know, the sport can mean so much for different people, so many things for different people, right? I mean, for some people, just to finish a marathon is an accomplishment. Some people train and try to just qualify for Boston. So, you know, for me on that day, I wasn't running the time that I wanted to run. And, you know, it's easy to get in your head and walk away from a race like that and be really upset and discouraged. But then having something kind of so pure happen, like Meb grabbing my hand and seeing people's response to that. And, you know, he didn't have a good day either, right? But it's all relative, you know, for him not having a good day versus me and someone else. So it just, I think it really makes you appreciate that the sport has such a following, and it's inspirational for so many people in so many different ways. And, you know, Meb in particular, I think, he's such a celebrity in sport, and he's just so genuine and really, you know, wants to, you know, support all runners. And I think he's just so excited about it that it was hard. It's really hard to, you know, to be be upset about your race. And I think it kind of minimizes that relative to how big of a community it is.
Yeah, yeah. And I can imagine, like, when you were trying to go to bed that night, like, usually we would be, like, replaying the race, like, what happened here? And maybe there was still a little bit of that, but you're probably, I mean, I'm guessing, thinking, like, whoa, like, I kind of can't believe that happened. And let's talk about maybe more the buzz afterwards. Mm-hmm. So your phone, from what I read, what I hear, that went, you know, off the hook, just crazy calling, and everyone wanted an interview with you. So tell us a bit about what that was like with that buzz afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty overwhelming and exciting in itself. You know, from interviews at the finish line or, you know, in the hotel afterwards, to their local media and, you know, runner's world, people wanted to talk to me, you know, about what that moment meant, or, you know, the, I think we were in the Washington Post. You know, something I responded on to him on Twitter, which I'm not usually huge in social media. You know, I think I follow more than I participate in that, in some sense. So I gained probably 800 Twitter followers overnight. Wow. Just as a result of that and kind of the, and then getting tagged in retweets of that picture and our quotes. So, you know, that was kind of fun. It was a little much to maintain, but mm-hmm. You know, then also on, say, Facebook, a lot of people that I haven't spoken with in years, you know, since high school or middle school, reached out to me, you know, saying they'd seen me on the news and, you know, how exciting that was. So that was just an interesting experience too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so overall, I mean, there was a lot of buzz, and, you know, it was fun but exhausting.
Yeah, I'm sure. Being
someone like Meb who's dealing with that on a much more regular basis.
Yeah, definitely. And was there anyone, you said that some people reached out to you, is there anyone that you've, like, reconnected with because of that moment, or any other people that you've kind of met because of that moment, other than obviously Meb?
Yeah, I mean, I think lots of people, you know, met unofficially over social media. You know, it might be some random runner who just, you know, happened to reach out, or, yeah, you know, a friend of a friend type of a thing. No one that it's, like, sparked some big new friendship or anything like that, yeah. But it is just kind of fun to, again, just talk to people about, you know, mm-hmm. what they're doing and, you know, how that might have made a difference for them or where they were when they saw that event.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. And have you stayed in touch with him? Like, he seems to be, I mean, you've mentioned it a little bit, but he's just someone who's just loved by everyone. You know, he was recently called a hero by the Olympic qualifiers and the trials. And have you managed to stay in touch with him? Or,
I mean, I'd say through Twitter, yeah, a little bit. And yeah, then I have been with him at least one or two other races since Boston. I saw him at Falmouth and ended up doing my warm-up with mm-hmm. him kind of unintentionally. But we were running on the bike path near, I don't know if you've ever run the Falmouth Road Race in the summer, but it starts, you know, in Falmouth on the water, and it's, you know, you're able to run on a bike path to do your warm up and cool down. And a biker had actually fallen and hit his head and was, you know, surrounded by a group of runners who are all out there doing their warm up. And I got there kind of late to that pack with Meb and one other runner, and he, you know, was at that point, people had already called the ambulance, something we could really do, and we weren't sure that the biker would be okay. And it's just, like, a really shocking disturbing event to have, like, before you're about to enter a race. And Meb was just like, I said a prayer. There's nothing more we can do. Like, let's keep doing our warm up. So I've had like kind of two intense moments with Meb in my career so far. But again, I think he's thankfully that biker was okay. But aside from that, just things on Twitter here and there. Mm-hmm. But right after, or a week after Boston, he actually got my phone number from the Boston Athletic Association and called me just to see how everything was going and again, like, say how meaningful that whole experience was for him, you know, from the running community and, you know, from his perspective and his career. But I hadn't answered the phone right away, and I'd been out for dinner and saw that a San Diego number had called me and kind of jokingly said, like, oh, I bet it's Meb, like, just calling to check in. Like, and then I listened to this voicemail and that's exactly what it was. So, so he's a really nice guy, and I'm really excited that he came in second and he's going to have his fourth run at the Olympics.
Yeah. No, that just shows it all over again, that just mm-hmm. how genuine he is, that, you know, he deals with this every single day, and yet he was concerned with how you were doing. So what a guy, really, really awesome. Okay, so let's kind of move on more to you and Jobcase, where you are the VP of operations. I'm imagining a pretty stressful job. You have very heavy hours, you know, 60 plus hours a week. So the big question that jumps to mind to me and probably most of our listeners is, how the heck do you fit your training in for a marathon, let alone being an elite marathoner?
Yeah, I think I don't have much time for much else, especially over the winter when the days are short. It just feels like I'm just working and running and trying to, you know, keep my sanity. But to some extent, I think I need running to help me work that much, and vice versa. Like, it's time that I'll carve out for myself that, you know, if it was just something more social or, I don't know, I think something else that I didn't have such a set goal and kind of that need to get outside and get fresh air, maybe I wouldn't make the time to do it. So, you know, I find that if I, on days that I don't run for, you know, whatever reason, or even in downtime in between races, you know, I might even feel a little more wound up at work because I haven't been able to get let some of that out, which I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, you know, regardless of what your job is or what your hours are. I think when you have those days when you can't run, or you know, you don't run as far as you wanted to and you're a little antsy. So that, I think that's part of that's just my personality, and I'm used to having to balance it, you know, but specifically for how I fit in marathon training with my job, I do just get up early and try to fit it in before I get to the office.
What time is early?
Probably 5 or 5:30, which isn't crazy. I usually get to the office between, you know, 8 and 8:30. And then, you know, I could be here till any time or end up working more from home. Being in a startup, you're just kind of always on and priorities can change. And so I have to stay flexible in general with my schedule and my running, but I like to at least do it in the morning when I know that then it doesn't matter what else might happen during the day that I've already gotten my workout in. And I do, you know, sometimes I'll end up just running home as a double, incorporating that, which isn't ideal, but that kind of helped me add on a little bit more mileage this winter that I might not have done otherwise. Yeah, so it's, you have to be creative, I think, and find what works for you. Some people that I know and train with that have to get in at 7, you know, they run in the afternoon, and that's just, you know, you make it work.
Mm-hmm. Based on your strengths, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what other, you mentioned about, you know, doing your runs in the morning, and you said you mostly do it in the morning, so I'm guessing you kind of just have longer runs rather than lots of doubles, but do you have any creative kind of ways you've managed to cram a run in here or there that either might be a funny story or just might be give someone an idea if they are in kind of that busy, stressful job where they think, I just don't have the time?
Probably not really funny stories per se. I would say, like, my doubling on the way home from work with, I have a huge backpack that I can't leave my laptop at work. So
that's my
like strict, my weight training exercise with my backpack on. Or, you know, occasionally I've tried to squeeze it in from the office, and, like, we don't have a gym here, but we have a shower in the bathroom, which is a little awkward. But I just have done that from time to time when it's too cold in the morning and I've just wanted to get outside. But yeah, it's just, I think trying to, because the multitasking on the way to and from work is probably the weirdest thing, but I know a lot of people end up doing that. So it's not that different.
Yeah. And so with the stress levels that you mentioned earlier, you said that, you know, you've got pretty good at balancing it, but I'm just trying to think about, like, if that was me and I had your, you know, a high level job, I would be kind of stressing out about work and that would start to eat away at my training, kind of make, you know, it would start to affect me and have, you know, make me have trouble sleeping or kind of, you know, get in the way of runs because you're like focused on something else. Like, how do you keep your stress level low while you're trying to, you know, get those important workouts in or those important weeks of training?
Well, you know, leading up to the trials, I feel like I people knew in my office that I was doing that, and that helped me, you know, maybe leave a little I normally would. And I tried to carve out that time, but I wouldn't say I necessarily can do that before every big race. You know, I think I try to just focus on the workout, you know, say I am doing a workout after work or something early in the morning before work, and I know I have a really busy day, like just focusing on the workout and not let myself think about everything else that I have going on, which, you know, some days that works well and some days it doesn't. But just, you know, on my easy runs, sure, I let myself think about work, but on those really hard effort days back, yeah, I think it does get distracting and you're probably wasting extra energy that you shouldn't be thinking about something. You know, if I'm on a 2-hour run, I'm not going to be able to do any work at that time. So thinking about it doesn't really help me.
That's true.
What I have to kind of force myself to do when I, you know, get tired or get stressed out.
So do you have any advice for someone who is interested in, you know, maybe they're thinking about doing their first marathon, but they're thinking, oh, well, before maybe listening to you, oh yeah, I just don't have the time. You know, I have a busy job. I work 40 hours a week, or maybe it's just, you know, I have kids or whatever it may be. Do you have any suggestions or any thoughts on, just, I don't know, tidbits of what you would tell people who want to do that, but maybe have been intimidated in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say go easy on yourself in terms of, like, don't second guess your training. Like, no one can do exactly what they're setting out to do every day. And I think, you know, if you're training and something comes up, you know, you have a commitment with your kids and you can't run as long as you need to, you know, whether you added on that extra 2 miles in the morning or not, like, that isn't going to make or break your race.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously you have to put in the time and train hard, but I think really overanalyzing your training, and because you want to be confident when you get to run. And I think that can make more of a difference than maybe those few workouts or training runs that go as well as you'd hoped, you know. And also, like, again, like, you know, ideally maybe you'd spread out workouts in a certain way, but if you have to move things around during the week, you know, when you look at it in the scheme of things and how many, you know, how much effort you're putting in and how much time you're putting in it, those little details, you know, they're not, yes, they'll make a difference. And, you know, especially when you're competing at the level of, you know, MEB versus, you know, you're in the top few spots, but if you know, there's so much that's mental and the physical, if you've put in enough of the work, I think just, you know, don't second guess yourself. I think you're better off just saying, I know I worked as hard as I could and circumstances come up. You know, for me, even, I feel like that's advice I've given to people of various levels, because it's really true.
Yeah.
There's always going to be something, and it's easy. You don't want to have that as like your excuse that lets you not push as hard. It's better to just say, you know, I feel confident that I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a huge part of it. Like you said, the mental aspect and, but yeah, not second guessing yourself. It kind of reminds me of like people that are on a diet. Like if you, you know, one day you kind of, go a bit overboard and you have, you know, you have cake and you have cookies and you eat all these things and you're trying to eat well, it's not really going to do you any harm to do it once as long as you get back on. But if you let it kind of be like, oh, well, I'm useless, why do I even bother trying? And then it, you know, then you've wasted it. So I think,
exactly.
you know, the whole, you're basically saying the consistency is key thing here. And yeah, like you said, as long as people are aware that as long as you're doing what you can. And I've kind of been learning that a bit myself recently, that as long as you're doing the best you can with the situation you are put in at this moment, right, that's all you can ask of yourself.
And yeah
that's exactly. Kind of seems how you approach your training. And it's good to hear that you remain flexible. Like, you know, if something does come up, you don't kind of beat yourself up, because I think people listening can say, okay, well, she's an elite runner, and if she can do that, then I can kind of do that. So that's good to hear. And so with the supplemental stuff, you know, you kind of mentioned about Meb doing all the little things, little details. Do you manage to get those in, or are those kind of the things that kind of slip through the cracks with the lack of time?
Yeah, I'd say it's a little of both. I'd say I'm less consistent about those things. I don't know, mentally, I'd rather get in an extra mile or two than stretch for 15 minutes, which isn't always the best advice. So I wouldn't go off of that for people listening. But again, closer to a race, I'll try to carve out more of that time than I might do earlier on in my training.
Yeah.
Getting massage, foam rolling, and all of that, that I know those details, that does make a difference, especially in your recovery, I think, more than anything.
Seen that yourself, like you've noticed the difference when they're there and not there.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I'm foam rolling consistently, my hamstrings aren't as tight, and then I think I'm good and I stop, and then that's the first thing that tightens up again. You know, for me, that's the area that maybe is more prohibitive. So I think I can always do more of that, but it's a trade-off of, you know, whether I make the time or not. So yeah.
I think this is good for people to hear, because we all kind of, it's very easy to get in that state of where you, like you said, you know, something hurts, so you really like attack it because you've got this fear of injury all of a sudden, and then you work at it, and then when it goes away, you kind of like slack off again. So it's good to hear that you, as well as everyone else, is in a constant like battle. So we can all work at this together. And what is the, so out of those things you mentioned, foam rolling, that's a priority for you. If you could get a few of those things in, what are the priorities for you, other than just obviously the straight running?
Yeah, I mean, in addition to the foam rolling, I think doing a little more regular massage, just to take that time. Mm-hmm. But that's probably the other main.
Okay. Do you do any other like strength training or any kind of like other classes or anything like that to go with your running, or is it just the running you do?
I do strength training, like just with hand weights and things, different core exercises, you know, at my apartment. The past few weeks, now that I have some downtime, I've been doing yoga occasionally or spin classes, but that's more as an alternative. And I think, you know, that's not something I do consistently when I'm training. So.
Okay, cool.
Just for fun to mix it up.
Yeah, no, that's the perfect time to actually give those a try, isn't it? And see which ones you like. And if you can keep it going, then that's great. But
yeah,
as we kind of have already talked about, it's easy to kind of fall off when when the time kind of crunches a bit more. And then the next thing I wanted to ask you about was you are, I don't know if you'll agree with this, but kind of a weekend warrior. So you, in a way, lot of your training done in the weekend, which, you know, initially was given a lot of bad press. Like people were kind of saying, you know, you can't do it this way, you're going to end up injured or whatever. But, you know, we have a an article that we talked about the research, which I'll put a link to in the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC99. They found that it wasn't that bad. But what has been your experience with that, you know, doing it all on the weekends?
Yeah, I mean, my experience, or, you know, just to give some examples, I think a lot of times I might actually do a hard workout on a Saturday followed by a long run, you know, at an easy, moderate pace on Sunday, rather than doing two track workouts or, you know, two hard workouts during the week, just again, because of the time. Like it's hard enough for me to carve out that time to get to the track once, or to do a really long tempo workout once in the morning before work, never mind twice. And I'd rather do it on a Saturday. I think that has worked well for me in various training cycles, because when you're, you know, it's that extra kind of strain, and doing it back to back, like for marathoning, it does work, as long as I'm, you know, I'll take it very easy on that following Monday and try to, you know, really recover. Don't end up doing much else on Sunday, probably, after my long run. And I think my coach is in support of that. So I've never really overthought it. Again, I think it's shifting things one day in either direction. I usually approach my weeks in sort of beginning, middle, end, and not the specific day of the week. So, but I think it depends on the person. Like, I know I can handle it, but have to be careful, and maybe I wouldn't do the extra interval on Saturday knowing that I have to do a long run on Sunday and that sort of thing.
But that might actually help you when it comes to race day. You know, they say that often people make the mistake of kind of leaving their race out on the court, on their workouts, kind of being a workout champ, and then never quite performing. But that probably means when you get to race day, you can perform.
I'd say in general, yes. Of course, not every performance I've had, I feel like, is my best, right?
Yeah.
So, but I do think, I have the tendency, especially the combination of doing two hard efforts back to back, or not wanting to aggravate a hamstring that's tight. Now I'll push myself, but I'm careful not to, like you said, have my 22 mile long run with a tempo in it be better than my marathon.
Yeah. No, that's great. And so now you've got used to that. Would you say you prefer doing it that way, or is it kind of out of necessity?
It's a little of both. It's hard to say. I prefer doing it on Saturday to, doing it on a Wednesday morning or Friday morning and having to get up an extra half hour earlier and three quarters of the workout being in the dark. I think that's part of it. That makes it that much harder. When you're running in the dark, you feel like you're going faster than you are. So but it does mean that sometimes, I can just do less on weekends that's not running, and that, that's not always desirable.
Yeah. We actually, it's interesting you mentioned that form of training, is actually what Runners Connect. We're big fans of that with the coaching. So all of our athletes who are listening right now are probably agreeing, because they'll do the same kind of thing with the steady run and then the longer run. To, I think it's good marathon training, because you get used to running on tired legs. So it's interesting to talk about that. And so have you ever tried living like the professional runner lifestyle, where you do just focus 100% on running?
No, I haven't.
Would you be interested in it, or is that like?
It's hard to say. Like, it seems great. But I don't know how long I would last mentally. I feel like I would still end up, because I had so much more free time, trying to find other projects to do. So that kind of defeats the purpose. I think I like being busy. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes when I've, thinking back to college, maybe when you have more, you're spending more time with your team and more time with runners. I always found that I needed that time, different friends. Like, I never lived with other runners. I needed to not have that consume 100% of my day, outside of classes. And so I think it's, in that sense, I don't know that it would be that beneficial for me. Although clearly I could take more time to stretch and get massages. That would be nice. But I think after the few weeks, I don't know. It's an interesting question
about. Yeah. Oh no, you're preaching to the choir. I tried it for a few months, and I just couldn't handle it. It was just too much running. And like you said, it's good to have other things. And I think there's certain kinds of people, even within running. I mean, most runners are like type A, but there's certain kinds of people that just have no desire to just be, just relax and watch TV or play video games all day. And I know I was the same way as you. I'd find busy work just to, sort out my iTunes files, or like, work through my documents and see which ones are useful and things like that. So yeah, I think that's interesting to see that you're obviously that kind of person as well. And I'm sure a lot of listeners are too. All right. So let's move on to the trials. By the time this comes out, it would have been, maybe a distant memory, or it will be kind of in the past a little bit. But can you kind of share with our listeners who may not have read any articles on it or don't know anyone personally, just how bad it was out there? Actually, before I ask you that, let me just explain for any non-US listeners. The US Olympic trials was pretty brutal. I think the temperature was between 70 and 80 degrees Celsius, Fahrenheit, during the race. And, you know, it was, I think around 50 men and around 50 women dropped out, or 59 men, 49 women dropped out. It was just, you know, very hot, it was in LA, so it was very like stuffy. So not a very good situation. And Shalane Flanagan actually, you know, nearly passed out in the race. So it was pretty brutal all the way across the board. But now I've kind of explained that. Can you tell us just what it was like actually being
out there? I mean, like you said, you know, it was frustrating to see the weather forecast leading up to it. And we also didn't start the race until it was 10 a.m. for the men and 10:22 for the women. So it actually was pretty comfortable out in the morning as we, you know, were walking to the starting line and, you know, kind of warming up, or, you know, I probably warmed up for all of 5 minutes just to try to keep my body temperature cool. But it didn't really feel bad the first hour or so. So you were still before the peak heat of the day. But as it, you know, as it just, the sun just got stronger, like it was hot and you were in the sun 90% of the course. Like there was really little shade. So we were running back and forth, almost doing like a lollipop kind of a course, and mostly on the same road. So you knew it was ahead of you. And you know, you could see the, you know, downtown LA is where the starting and the finish line was, and you could see the smog kind of hang over the buildings, and you're just running in the sun, and it's like, that's what I'm running towards. And you know, I felt pretty strong through three quarters of the race, and then you know, I just was like dumping water bottles on myself, and like all I could think about was like getting to the, you know, they had a station with kind of wet washcloths, and I was like putting those in the, tucking them in the back, you know, of my shirt, just to try to stay cool. And I think I just had to slow down and just to be able to finish, because I, you know, my brain was fried. It was just a really, like, I don't know, thinking back, it's funny because I just feel like there was some point where I just kind of lost it and was like, I'm so hot. And that's all I could think about. And I just couldn't focus anymore. And, you know, it's also, you know, psychs you out a little bit to see people dropping out periodically. And so it was a frustrating experience overall. I think, you know, knowing, so to almost 20% of the runners in each race dropped out, or more, depending, probably more for the men. And when you think about how long everyone's been training for the race, and people are in, hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, some of the best shape they've ever been in, and still that many people dropped out, you know, it's just frustrating that the committee didn't move the starting time up or anything. Like it was just, I think they're lucky that nothing worse happened to anyone, given that it was just really dangerous conditions, I think. And obviously some people fare better in the heat than others, but you know, just as a percent of the total, I think it really wasn't, I don't know, it's frustrating to talk about, as you can tell, but.
Was it the toughest, would you say that was the toughest marathon you've ever done?
I think so, in a way. I mean, it's weird because I felt so good for most of it, and I can't like point to, you know, like aerobically, I felt okay. And I think it's just like, as I, you know, I was tight. I think the dehydration, like you tightened up a lot more quickly. So, you know, from that perspective, it probably was one of the hardest races. But, you know, I think back to like the really windy New York and Boston, like I felt like I was working harder in those the whole time. Whereas in this, it was more challenging just mentally, and the heat really like getting to you in a different way than when you just feel like you're tired, you hit your body hits that wall. This was, it's something I haven't really experienced before.
No, I could see that. Kind of makes me think about the Chinese torture method of like the drip, you know, how just like after a while you just can't take the heat anymore and you just want to be like, I'm done with this. Like I could see it, you know, just really grinding on you. And especially in an event like that, when dropping out is, you know, it's going to run through everyone's mind. Would you say that it kind of came across your head a bit more than it has done in other races?
Yeah,
I mean, so many people as well.
I happy to say I've never really seriously considered dropping out of a race like that. So the fact that that even crossed my mind, like that last time we had to, you know, this being a loop, right, you ran through the finish line three times before you actually crossed it. So going through it that third time, that's where it was also really tempting of, do I have to do this lap again? Or, you know, what if I just stopped here? But, you know, I had a lot of family and friends out there to watch me, and they were so, you know, just excited to be a part of the event. And it was like, there's no way I can drop out. It's like, if I can run a slower time, if that's what it takes to finish, which is, you know, ultimately what happened. And I definitely slowed down on that last loop just to try to stay cool mentally and physically. But it's, you know, dropping out was not on the table for me.
Yeah, no, that's good. And so what did you tell yourself when you were thinking about that? Were you thinking about that for those family and friends, or were there other things that you just were like, get to, like you mentioned earlier, get to the
next? Yeah, it was a little bit of both. But and it's also trying to put it in perspective of, you know, getting to this event in itself was an accomplishment for everyone. And, you know, it's the first time I've been to the trials, and I, you know, ideally wanted to have a really competitive race. And I think I did that if it had been an 18-mile race. I was pretty competitive for those first 18 to 20 miles. But, you know, I'm still not happy with how that went in the end. But when I think about, you know, my family and friends were just excited to be there and, you know, get to get in. And do they really know, you know, if you run a 2:40 whatever versus, you know, a 2:37, which is probably the best that was going to happen for me, given the heat. You know, they're like, that's fast. So you have to put it in
perspective. It's fast either way.
And I, you know, I had a lot. I didn't beat myself up over it too much because I was there for two more days with family and friends. And it's like, am I going to sit in the hotel room and, and be upset, or am I just going to, you know, it's an experience and, you know, I can learn from it and, you know, think about that in my training moving forward. But I, you know, I couldn't like let myself get really disappointed immediately. So that helped.
Yeah, no, I definitely could see that. And so you mentioned you've had, you know, rough weather in Boston and New York as well. So anyone listening right now, you know, races naturally do have, sometimes there are just bad weather conditions. Based on those bad experiences, what advice would you give to any listeners who are looking at their 10-day weather forecast counting down and they're thinking, oh no, like I'm going to have, you know, the wind or the rain or the cold or the snow? What would be your biggest advice?
You know, I think one thing is just resetting your goals and your expectations. You know, maybe the time you thought you were going to hit and you were pretty comfortable and confident you could hit, that becomes your reach goal, and you kind of have a secondary, like, you know, knowing that there's 30 mile an hour winds, you know, running that kind of a time is going to require, you know, having a breakout day, or focusing more on your place instead of your time, depending on where you are in the pack. You know, if you know some of your competition or know where you thought you should have placed overall, I think because it's a race, right? It's not a time trial. You're not running something on a treadmill with no wind resistance. And, that's always going to be a factor that, you have, you know, the elites are adjusting for it. You know, you can see that the times from this race at the trials were slower than any of the winners should have finished. Mm-hmm. So it's impacting everyone, not just you.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And so what's next for you? What is the next big?
To be honest, I'm not sure. The past 2 weeks, you know, we've been busy with work and, trying to not think about running as much, even though, you know, I've been running a few days, but, you know, not really thinking about it as training, just thinking about it as running and enjoying the nice weather we've been having in Boston, surprisingly, for February. I might do a full marathon. I'm not sure, but I think I'll do some shorter races with my team. In New England, we have like what they call a Grand Prix. It's just a series of races that they pick every year that are varying distances from like a 5K up to a marathon. And a lot of the women on the team that I'm on, which is Craft Concept Racing, they're trying to have a team presence at all of those races. So I want to try to contribute in that and just, you know, work on some speed and do some shorter things. But from there, I'm not sure.
No, that's absolutely fair enough. And then one last question before I get to the final kick round. Do you have anyone who's kind of in the slog of their either the Boston or their London or some other marathons training? They're in the part where it's just tired and they're fed up of hard workouts and everything's just a bit of a struggle. Do you have any last minute bits of advice based on, you know, you've obviously been through that working so hard and training hard as well? Do you have any advice?
I think in the last few weeks, it can be fun to, if you have other, you know, teammates or friends who are running the same race or training for a race at a similar time, like letting yourself get a little more excited and training with people as you're trying to push through. I think that can help you.
Yeah.
You kind of force yourself to remember why you like doing what you're doing on those days that you might really not want to go out the door.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, great. All right, then I've just got the final quick question. So starting with, what is the greatest advice you've ever received?
Oh, gosh. I didn't prepare for these as well. not advice, but I think something, I think it was one of my high school coaches had different inspirational things they would say, but one was dig deep, refuse to lose. And it's a silly thing, but I've found sometimes in races, if I repeat that over and over, especially going up hills and that sort of thing, that can help me.
That's a good one.
Not that that's advice, but.
No, I think that's definitely a good one. And anyone racing Boston right now could definitely use that one up and coming. Okay. Favorite running book or blog?
I'm going to say The Level Runner, which is just a local Boston underground website that they do a really good job of covering and getting to the heart of things in the New England area.
Yeah, we're big fans of them at Runners Connect. Okay, what would you like to tell a new runner, a brand new runner?
I think I'd say have fun with it. I think it's a great way to meet new people, to see new places when you're traveling. The fact that it's so easy to run, you just need your sneakers and can get out the door. To not judge yourself off of, it's just one day at a time and have fun with it.
That's good advice. Okay, your favorite pre-race meal?
I mean, usually races being in the morning, I have like a banana and a lemon Luna bar or something. If I don't have a lot of time before a race or something really basic. I wouldn't say those are favorite things, but that's just kind of what you get used to.
They work. Okay, and finally, your favorite running product.
Right now, I'm wearing this, again, Kraft windbreaker that's kind of a bright neon orangish pink.
That helps.
It's just gotten me through the winter. It's been a good layer, and it's bright, and I've probably worn it too often this winter while training.
There's nothing wrong with that. Okay, and then if someone wanted to keep in touch with you, kind of follow along with what you're doing, which channel would you like them to use?
I think probably Twitter.
Okay, and what is your Twitter? I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but just as well.
Yep, it's just at Hill Dion, H-I-L, and then my last name.
Okay, all right, I will put a link to that in the show notes. Thank you so much for your time today.
You're
I really
welcome.
Enjoyed getting to know you a bit more, and I'm sure our listeners did too.
All right, awesome. Yeah, let me know if you need anything else. Look forward to seeing it.
She's a rock star, right? Now that is juggling training and work well. If you're also good at fitting in your training while keeping in the balance, I'd love if you could share your tips and tricks on the show notes for this page, which you can find at runnersconnect.net/RC99. You may just help some other runners with their training. Now, you may have noticed that I just said the word 99 pretty weirdly. So that's mostly because I'm really excited and I can barely believe that we are already at episode 99. And next week is, obviously, number 100, and I have a very special episode planned for you with a fantastic giveaway to celebrate 100 episodes. So make sure you tune into that. If you have enjoyed the past 99, 29, 9, or even if this is your first episode, it would really make my day if you could leave a review on iTunes. So you can either go to the show notes for the page and click the link to the podcast page for instructions, or you can go straight to runnersconnect.net/run-to-the-top to go directly. Or if you're really tech savvy, maybe you don't need my instructions and you can go right to iTunes. Either way, it would really help me and I'd be so thankful. Until then, have a great week.